Hello and welcome to the Alcohol Alert podcast, brought to you by the Institute of Alcohol Studies. In the May 2021 edition, the Office for National Statistics released a report that shows there was a 20% increase in alcohol-specific deaths from 2019 to 2020. A research study has shown that alcohol adverts are appealing to adolescents and that this is likely to increase their susceptibility to drink. A study by University College London shows that young people who use social media more also consume alcohol more. The government has announced that it will be holding a consultation on mandatory alcohol labelling. The House of Lords debated the Commission on Alcohol Harms 2020 report. The World Health Organization has published a new report assessing changes to alcohol consumption between 2010 and 2019. The Institute of Alcohol Studies looks at the financial and social impact of the Treasury's decision to once again freeze alcohol duties this year. And the Republic of Ireland is set to introduce minimum unit pricing on alcohol. We spoke to Professor Sir Ian Gilmore, the Chair of the Alcohol Health Alliance, and Dr. Sadie Boniface, Head of Research at the Institute of Alcohol Studies. I asked them both what the main points of the study were and the significance of the numbers.
They found that in England and Wales, there were almost 7,500 alcohol-specific deaths in 2020. And this is almost a 20% increase on the year before. So a really alarming increase in just a single year. And that increase coincided with the beginning of the pandemic. So quarter two, starting in April 2020.
In terms of that 20% increase, that does sound huge. Have years before then seen similar sorts of increases, or is this an especially big increase this year?
This is an especially big increase this year. If you look at the charts in the ONS report, there's a big jump going from 2019 to 2020. And prior to that, there's been a bit of wobbling across the years, but really there's not really been any progress on this measure of alcohol harm for the 20 years that this data set's been measured.
Well, I've been looking at statistics coming out for 20 or 30 years now, and I have to say these are the first ones to really stop me in my tracks, because that 20% rise on the background of a year-on-year rise for 20 years was startling and shocking. So that's the first thing to get off my chest. I was really taken aback by these figures, and of course they throw up a lot of questions as to why they're like that. It's important, I think, to remember that these are alcohol-specific deaths. These are deaths where, as far as the statisticians are concerned, they're 100% caused by alcohol. And 80% of those are, in fact, alcohol-related cirrhosis of the liver. So we're looking at a subsection, if you like, of the total alcohol deaths, which, of course, are three or fourfold higher than the 7,500 alcohol-specific deaths. So these numbers don't include the many other deaths where alcohol is a contributing factor, like common cancers.
The increase very clearly coincides with the beginning of the pandemic. So this is definitely something going on to do with COVID, but we don't really know exactly why we've seen quite such a sharp increase. ONS say themselves that there's many complex factors behind it and that they don't yet understand all of these. But what we do know is that this is not some quirk with the data or some change in the way that they measured things. This is a real increase. And that means that it's something that's very alarming. Because of the way that alcohol-specific deaths are defined, most of these deaths are a result of chronic health conditions caused by higher risk or dependent drinking over quite a long period of time. So what we think is it's not that these are people who were previously drinking at lower risk levels, that their drinking suddenly increased at the beginning of the pandemic with the first lockdown in March last year. What I think it's much more likely is that this is an indicator around people not feeling comfortable to access health services during the pandemic. They're afraid to go to A&E because of the virus. So because of the way that alcohol-specific deaths are calculated, it's quite a particular measure. So we've seen 7,500 alcohol-specific deaths last year in England and Wales, but there's actually many, many more deaths caused by alcohol in total. Alcohol-specific deaths themselves, around 4 in 5 of those are from alcoholic liver disease, and that's something that normally presents as an emergency, which is why personally, I think it's quite likely that the one of the big explanations for this increase is around people not feeling able to access health services during the time of crisis last year.
There was an understandable reluctance to yourself at risk of getting COVID by turning up at the emergency department. And so many patients, I think, will have presented themselves too late for medical intervention to make the difference that it would normally. It would pull some of those people back from the brink. And a third major factor almost certainly has been difficulty in accessing treatment services. Alcohol treatment services, we know, were already stretched before the pandemic. We know that a remarkably low percentage of people with an alcohol-related problem have accessed treatment services, and this became worse during the lockdown. So I think those are the major factors. There may be other ones, and I think, like so much of the research, I think as we look back with more figures and more hindsight, it'll become clearer which of these was the most important.
So in terms of the next steps of this, at what point will we start to understand what the reasons are behind it?
So there's lots of different things that we actually need. So there have been undoubtedly changes to the way that we drink during the pandemic, with pubs and restaurants, everything like that being closed for such a long time. People's drinking patterns have shifted, and we don't know yet how long those changes are going to persist for. And we also don't know the future with regards to what restrictions are going to be in the future as well. So lots of uncertainty there, but there have been changes to consumption. More specifically on these alcohol-specific deaths and understanding the causes of that better, a couple of areas I think that are really important. First one is looking into electronic health records of people who have died, these cases of alcohol-specific deaths in the last year, to perhaps try and better understand the histories and what's gone on there and what's precipitated that. And then secondly, around involving people with lived experience of alcohol dependency and alcohol harm, to understand how has the experience been trying to get GP appointments, how has the experience been trying to access drug and alcohol services. And for people who have had emergency needs to go to accident and emergency departments, have there been times where that's not looked so realistic as it normally would have done because of the pandemic?
So the ONS report also stated that men and women living in much more deprived areas are far more likely to die from alcohol-related issues. So I think a lot of people will be wondering why that is.
Yeah, that's the case with these alcohol-specific deaths. We see a rate around 2 or 3 times higher in the most deprived groups compared with the most affluent groups, not only in the alcohol-specific deaths data, but that's something that's seen across many, many measures of alcohol harms. This is a really big problem, and not just specific to this particular outcome. There is a complicated relationship, as many researchers, any that are listening might know, between alcohol consumption and alcohol harm in terms of the socioeconomic profile or gradient there. So what we do see is that a lot of the time it's more affluent groups that drink more on average or more frequently, but more disadvantaged groups are much, much more vulnerable to alcohol harm. And there's lots of different reasons behind that. Some of them are a bit technical, so around how we invite people to take part in surveys and who doesn't get invited to participate in surveys. But then there are other reasons as well that are maybe a little bit more relevant to this, around how very, very heavy drinking might actually be clustered in more disadvantaged groups. So very, very heavy drinking and abstention being more clustered in those groups, whereas in more advantaged groups, there's more people who are drinking more on average because nearly everybody is a drinker, for instance. Then there's other reasons too around access to health services, and there's a gradient, there's been other research examining the gradient in access to health services. So there's lots going on there and really complicated.
So what should we be saying to government? Well, I think it's a warning that the government would ignore at their peril. Having said that, they possibly will ignore it because alcohol has not been high on the list of public health priorities. Obesity has caught the caught the headlines, I think in part because of the Prime Minister's brush with death and COVID, and the links between obesity and COVID. There are almost certainly similar links with alcohol-related diseases, but they haven't got the same headlines. So we are saying to the government, we need an alcohol strategy, and one that's based on the evidence of what works, rather than the pleas and pleadings of the global alcohol producers who have really held back progress in getting an alcohol strategy for this country. What should that strategy look like? Well, the Alcohol Health Alliance is firmly based on evidence, and the evidence here is I think indisputable that the factors that are driving the nation's drinking are its price, its availability, and its marketing, probably in that order of importance. We will have no problem in advising government what to do. Price, I think one of the difficulties of over price is that all the discussion in recent years has been over minimum unit price. And that I think is because from the expert's point of view, minimum unit price is a very neat solution in that it targets those people that are drinking most and targets those drinks that are most attractive to heavy drinkers. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that just one of the bullets available in relation to price, and duty is another important one. The general tax on alcohol needs to, as a minimum, keep pace with inflation, but probably should be rising higher than inflation. And then there are other forms of policy around volumetric taxing of alcohol that the Alcohol Health Alliance has been proposing. So there's no doubt if we could get only one strategy on the government's agenda, it would be price.
With increasing duties, would you say there's an argument for the government to bring back in and reintroduce a duties escalator where they regularly keep the level of duty above inflation rate?
Absolutely. We are hugely supportive of an index-linked duty rise so that it keeps pace with inflation, indeed preferably rises above inflation. And of course, this is what the Labour government did in around, I think it was 2008, 2009, where they made a commitment to increase duty 2% above inflation. And for the first time, we saw a levelling off and even a fall in alcohol-related deaths. There's real world evidence for that. And it would be something that, you know, at a time when government is looking for money, it's very hard to find an argument against it other than the protestations of industry that jobs will be lost and all this, the sort of usual horror stories that they tell. But yes, we'd be strongly in favour of an index-linked rise in duty on alcohol.
And you mentioned minimum unit pricing, and you make the point that it's not the only thing that should or could be done. But with that, the Republic of Ireland are bringing minimum unit pricing in at the end of this year, and Wales and Scotland already have it. Does that put more pressure on England to bring it in as well?
Absolutely. I think it will go the same way probably as smoking in public places, which I think my memory serves me correct, started off in the Republic of Ireland, came into Scotland, other parts of the UK, and finally Westminster government was forced into doing it. So I think it's quite likely this similar thing will follow. Unfortunately, it's kind of given the government an excuse for let's wait and see what happens in Scotland. Oh, there isn't quite enough evidence yet. Let's wait a little bit longer. And the government can be remarkably interested in evidence when it suits them. They will reorganize the whole of the National Health Service without a jot of evidence. But when it comes to something they don't want to do, the evidence is never quite strong enough. But I think it will eventually. It just makes so much sense. The fact that, you know, you can buy white cider cheaper than bottled water in a supermarket just doesn't make sense. And I'm not an expert in treatment services, but there's no doubt at all that one of the major factors has been that difficulty in accessing services during COVID and lockdown. And we just really must not let government off the hook. If you compare the access of people with drug-related problems to treatment services versus access of those with alcohol problems, they're of a different order of magnitude, and that is just not acceptable. I think we possibly need to emphasize more the harm to others, because when a patient can't access treatment services, then, you know, it's not just that individual that's being damaged, it's the family around them, the children and the communities they live in. So it, you know, it is a problem that's magnified by the impact that the person with a dependence on alcohol suffers. It's just magnified through the lens of their family.
Yeah, and that touches on a point I think I read in some of the news articles about the ONS report. Some of the quotes, when they quoted you in the BBC, I think it was, you focused on the fact that this increase in deaths, these are real people who are dying. I think it's easy to get sort of caught up in the statistics of it and just see the numbers, but you made a really good, important point about it. These being individual families and individual people across the country that have been affected by these quite devastating statistics.
That's right. And I think there's been a lot of progress made in reducing the stigma of mental illness. And I think a lot of celebrities and so on are now prepared to come forward and talk about their mental illness. And I'm not just talking about royalty here. Whereas I think there's still a big stigma around alcohol. It's partly because many people still see it as being the individual's own fault. They've got into where they are. But no one wants to be dependent on alcohol. Nobody wants to be dying of an alcohol-related cause. It isn't a lifestyle choice. It's a true mental illness and addiction. And it needs to be treated as such. We know that probably a good 50% of alcohol dependence is genetic. And I've seen this again and again over the years in patients. There's a father or a mother or an uncle or a son, brother. It's so common. And there's good biological reasons for that. So we just need to get away from this concept that the individual needs to pull themselves together and that they're weak-willed. It's an illness and it needs to be treated as such.